we just reach out to someone and we say, okay, Joan Smith, she does webinars. I'll email Joan and see if she wants to support my webinar. And you'll hear crickets. She won't respond because you've got no relationship with her. And again, you're not selling a washing machine. You got to have a first date with Joan first, right? She's got to get to know my brand and trust me and respect the content, et cetera, before I suggest that.
You're listening to the Thought Leaders Business Lab, the podcast for coaches, thought leaders, and change makers who are ready to become the standout expert. If that's you, stay tuned because you're in the right place. I'm your host, Samantha Riley, and I want to help you build a successful business sharing your expertise, generate the impact and income you need to create your ideal lifestyle. It's time to make a difference and scale up. Are you ready? Let's enter the lab. Welcome to the Thought Leaders Business Lab, Tom. It's really great to have you joining me here today.
It's been fun already and we haven't even started.
I know, how funny. I always have this thought that maybe I should have like this second show of recording the conversations before and after. Sometimes I think that they're even better than the interviews themselves.
Yeah. And don't you have those experiences also where you have a guest and you're going chat, 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 and you think, damn, I wish I'd captured that.
Okay, the interview. All the time. And actually, when we were chatting, I nearly hit record, almost hit record. And that's why I went, no, let's stop. Let's hit record now before we actually chat out. But I don't think that could have happened. Before we jump into today's episode, which I already know is going to be great, why don't you share a little bit about what it is that you do and the kinds of clients that you work with?
Okay. So our clients are... my clients, for them, it's more like they're proposing marriage than it is selling a washing machine. So I know that's not a traditional answer, but essentially they've got intellectual property that they are marketing. So that means they're probably a business coach, executive coach, business trainer, financial planner, software as a service, or marketing online programs or courses. They're the six niches that I work in. And my specialty is really summed up pretty well by that. We're not selling washing machines, we're proposing marriage. In other words, the prospect is considering entering into a relationship with my clients that's going to be of an ongoing nature, perhaps 3 months, perhaps 3 years, perhaps who knows, 10 years or whatever. So therefore, the prospect needs a first date or two or three or four. So my clients, it doesn't work for them if they just rock up to a business networking meeting and hand out a bunch of cards because, you know, it's like premature proposition. Mm-hmm. So that's the common denominator is, my clients need to create an opportunity for their prospects to get to know my clients first so they can establish rapport and trust before they even suggest meeting to talking about business or anything like that. And so it's all around there. It's all about inbound marketing. It's all about giving the prospects a sample of the brand, of the service, of the ideas, seeing who's interested, and then generating the leads after that.
Perfect. I mean, apart from, you know, your local fish and chip shop, I actually think that there's not a lot of businesses that can do business straight off the bat these days. I think that people's BS radars are getting more and more highly tuned.
Well, I think that's definitely true because there's more and more BS out there. I think the distinction is, you know, I wrote a book, one of the early books I wrote called Marketing the Invisible, and that's the distinction. If it's a physical thing like golf clubs, a house, I mean, if I were going to buy a new car, I don't have to like the car salesperson. I have to like the car. The car comes with a 5-year guarantee, a 7-year guarantee. I drive it. I like it. The salesperson might be sleazy, schmarmy, might be wonderful too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But chances are I don't want to have them over for Sunday brunch. Mm-hmm. I just want to do the transaction, get a good deal on the car. I have a relationship effectively with the car, if that doesn't sound too weird, not with the salesperson.
Yeah. And it doesn't sound weird. I'm a car person, so I totally get that.
Well, I'm a motorbike person. I can buy a car in 5 minutes, but I want to take 5 weeks to buy a motorbike. But the main point is that if we're marketing services, advice, or software, it's a relationship. And if we are the purchaser, we have to be able to trust the person who's behind the product or service. Whereas if it's a set of golf clubs, we just have to trust the physical thing and the brand behind it, washing machines and so on. So that's the dividing line, I think. Is there intellectual property involved that's going to take some time to deliver? Business coach, business trainer, personal coach, etc. Or is it a physical thing? If it's a physical thing, I'm not your guy. Mm-hmm. I'm the guy who shows you how to get prospects into your network, how to authentically impress them with the value you can deliver, and then propose a meeting.
Absolutely. And you are, and I said it before, and you told me I was wrong, but you are a genius at this. I absolutely loved the your book, Inbound Leads. But let's start there because you did mention inbound leads just a minute ago. And right. I think that this can be really confusing. And I know that we spoke another time and you answered this in a way that really made sense to me in a way I hadn't heard it before. So I'd love you to share what your take on inbound leads
inbound
is.
Inbound versus, okay. So inbound versus outbound. So first of all, I'll give you sort of my definition and then I'll give you a metaphor to bring that to life. So outbound marketing is where we put a value proposition in front of someone before we know if they have any interest in that whatsoever. So it's going to a business networking meeting, handing out business cards, hoping that someone will say, you know, can we talk about working together? That's outbound. We have no idea whether that person is interested or not. It's sending out 10,000 direct mail letters and saying, call this 1-800 number if you want SEO services today. It's any time we're going out to the market, cold calling, anything like that, where our prospects are not even actually prospects, they're just suspects. We suspect they might be interested, but we don't know. That's outbound marketing. It has nothing, outbound versus inbound. Because inbound is what we're doing is we're giving people the opportunity to buy or make an inquiry after they've already registered an interest in our type of service or product. Mm-hmm. That's the broad definition. It has nothing to do with the medium. You can do outbound marketing or inbound marketing with billboards, with pay-per-click, with webinars, with anything. You can do outbound or inbound with any medium. It's to do with when you propose to the prospect, mm-hmm. before or after you know if they have an interest. If it's after you know they have an interest, then it's inbound. Okay, so here's the metaphor. There's a forest, there's 100 bears in the forest, they're all asleep. They're grizzly bears, they're big. And we happen to know magically somehow that three of them are hungry. And we have a little honey pot and we want the three hungry bears to eat our honey. And this is a metaphor. The bears are a metaphor for potential clients. Mm-hmm. Honey pot's a metaphor for our services. So if you think about outbound marketing, what outbound marketing would do is it'd get a big, long, sharp stick and it'd go into the forest and find a bear that's sleeping. Remember, there's 100 sleeping, but only three are hungry. Mm-hmm. And it would find a bear sleeping bear and jab it in the bum with a sharp stick and wake it up. And then we'd wave the honey pot in front of the bear's nose. And we'd hope and pray that the bears, it was one of the hungry bears, so the bear's hunger exceeds its anger and it would eat the honey and not us. Otherwise, we'd better get... So that's like cold calling. It's outbound marketing. We're just annoying people and giving them an offer and we don't know if they're interested or not. Uh-huh. What inbound marketing does, it takes the same 100 sleeping bears in that forest, and we know three are hungry, and it puts the honeypot outside the forest. And the three hungry bears probably start dreaming they're swimming in honey or something, but they wake up and they go, oh, damn, it was a dream, but I can still smell the honey. And they come out of the forest and eat our honey. Mm-hmm. So that's a really good metaphor and analogy for outbound marketing, going to the forest, poking people versus putting the honeypot outside. So people might call this a lead magnet. I'm going to call it a honeypot. Mm-hmm. And webinars are a terrific honeypot. So if you run a webinar and you put the title of the webinar is a benefit-rich description of your service, the benefit of your service, then you're going to attract the three hungry bears to register for your webinar. And that's a really good example of outbound versus inbound.
That is so perfect. So that all sounds great. We want these inbound leads so that we have people that are hungry for our services when they join our webinar. How do we find this audience that is in that, you know, that frame of mind without doing the outbound?
How do you find the forest of sleeping bears amongst whom a 3% will be hungry? And 3%, by the way, is about, if you get an audience, let's say a webinar audience, you're going to have 3% that are ready to buy simply as soon as they read the title. Mm-hmm. So 3% is not a bad number. We've worked this out from thousands and thousands and thousands of registrants, subscribers, email, webinar attendees, etc. So how do you find them? There's two great places. You can find them without paying any money. That's the good news. You can find them and you can get fresh audiences every single month and a pretty high quality. No Facebook ads, no complicated online funnels, no affiliate marketing, which I know both of us, you know how to do all that stuff, but you don't have to do any of that. So the first place you find them is what's called OPN, which stands for Other People's Networks. More specifically, if you want to drill down on that, you have a bunch of email subscribers, and in your email subscribers are 100 sleeping bears, metaphorically speaking. Three of them are going to be hungry for my honey. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're giving them honey pots called an interview. So we know that the people are interested in the subject. There will be an alignment between their interest in this subject and their interest in what I do. Only 3% of them, probably. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, I'll take 3% of 100 any day sort of thing.
Yep.
So other people, it doesn't matter what your professional service is. It doesn't matter if you're working B2C, this business to consumer, whether you're a personal coach, your business coach, or a weight loss consultant, your relationship consultant. In North America in particular, but also here in Australia, there'll be dozens, if not hundreds. In the US, there'll be hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals who have email subscriber lists who represent your forest full of bears.
Mm-hmm.
So other people might call this joint venture. I call it OPN, other people's networks, for good reason. There's some differentiation. So those people, once you create the right experience for those people who own those email lists, will promote your webinar. That's what we do. Or they'll promote your podcast, or they'll promote your book. And it's normally done through reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
So as human beings, we are wired to want to keep the score even. Someone does something for us, we are inclined to want to do something because we want to keep that score even unconsciously. And that's called psychological reciprocity. So you have me on my podcast, on your podcast. I'd like to have you on my podcast, please.
Of course.
your webinar. So,
yeah.
So it's often done through reciprocity. But the thing is, if we just reach out to someone and we say, okay, Joan Smith, she does webinars, I'll email Joan and see if she wants to support my webinar, and you'll hear crickets. She won't respond because you've got no relationship with her. Mm-hmm. And again, you're not selling a washing machine. You've got to have a first date with Joan first, right? She's got to get to know my brand and trust me and respect the content, et cetera, before I suggest that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a multiple step system, data miner, who looks for the owners of the forest with the sleeping bears. She has a checklist she goes through. I want to make sure they feature themselves on their website. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure they're not marketing something physical, but rather something that's intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have five checklists she has to go through, check them off. They're all knockout factors. Unless she can check every single one of those five factors, then they're not going to be a prospect for a joint venture of any description.
Mm-hmm.
Then once they've passed those five factors, we have an algorithm, which was developed by two data scientists. And we put that person's website through the algorithm, and that predicts essentially what it's saying is the size of their email list and the responsiveness of the email list. That in turn tells us how many registrants they're likely to get for our webinar, should they promote our webinar.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to have an algorithm to do that. My clients use an algorithm, but I work pretty happily for many years without it. But you do need, first of all, to qualify this potential joint venture partner. And secondly, you need to create an opportunity for them to get to know you before you even talk about doing a joint venture. Mm. And podcast interviews are a terrific way to allow people to get to know you and for you to be able to establish rapport, respect, relatability, and reciprocity. Get their message out to your audience, whether you have an audience of one or 100,000. Give them the opportunity, give them voice to their message, and let reciprocity play its course.
Absolutely. I love that you mentioned the podcast interviews, because I think a lot of people miss this, and I'm a big proporter of people having a podcast, because not only are we building an audience of people that love our content, but the magic that happens, just like you and I were chatting before the interview, the magic that happens on an interview is incredible, because what it does is it speeds up the process of getting to know someone. You're hearing their absolute best content, which makes it very easy to open up a conversation after the interview. And that's why I personally love doing podcasts. And I have met so many, you know, joint venture partners, affiliate partners, all sorts of different people through my podcast. And, you know, if I would actually put that as probably, you know, just as good for me, if not better, than actually putting out the content itself.
Right. And if you do a podcast with webcams on like we're doing, we're eyeball to eyeball, and we know that oxytocin is produced in the brain when we're eyeball to eyeball, and that's the chemical that induces trust.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't see someone's eyes, in our culture certainly, we don't tend to trust them if they're sheepishly looking away all the time. But when we're eyeball to eyeball, oxytocin gets produced. So you're 100% correct. Doing a podcast is one of the fastest ways to establish rapport and respect with someone who didn't know you from a bar of soap prior to the interview.
Totally. So you've talked about, you've got this five-step checklist, and you put this through the algorithm, and you know that they've got great email lists and it's going to be responsive. But what about people that are listening? And I know there is a lot of people listening that are maybe just getting started. They've got little tiny small lists.
Yeah.
For them, they're sitting here going, well, that's great. That works for the big, you know, the big people. But what about me? So so what can you offer? How can people start to use this method?
Great, great question. Let me ask you, Sam, how many email subscribers were you born with?
Zero. Right. So great question.
We're all born naked. So you started with zero. I started with zero, but we started, and that was the important thing. One day we woke up and we went to MailChimp or we went to MailerLite or wherever, and we created an email account. We probably put in that our past clients. Do that. You can do that within 5 minutes of finishing this podcast interview, listening to this podcast interview. Do it. As Goethe said, the genius and the power and the magic is in beginning a thing. So we can't look at the Frank Kearns and the Brenda Bouchards and the Dan Kennedys and the Jay Brands of the world and say, well, if only I had a list like this. You got to start. So what you do is you start with an email list and you start a podcast and you get people on your podcast with small email lists. And that's the reason we do we run people through the algorithm. You can do it without the algorithm, but the algorithm is more accurate. Is we want to find people who have similar size email lists to yours. Now, I started running webinars with 8 attendees. Mm-hmm. You know, these days we can get 800 registrants and maybe 300 attendees. So, but you've got to start. And the important thing is to start. And I have this thing called the spiral. So almost all my clients start with no email list or a very small email list. Mm-hmm. They start doing podcast interviews with people who have similar sized lists. After they do a cross promotion of some description, and the best way to do cross promotion is the same medium. So you promote their book, they promote your book. You don't have a book, you promote their webinar, they promote your webinar, their podcast, whatever. So you reciprocate the same medium. That's the easiest way to get a yes to a joint venture value proposition. And then you do what 99% of marketers fail to do, even full-time professional marketers, you do the freaking debrief.
Mm-hmm.
After you've done the JV, you don't just chase, you know, go back into another forest and start poking bears and bums again. You do the debrief and you say, Sam, was it good for you? You know, did I manage to support you in a manner which that you're happy with? Because if not, I want to do something extra, because you want to walk away from every joint venture having verbally confirmed with them that they were delighted with working with you, because you want to do that again in a year's time. They will have grown their email list in a year. So why not circle back? You know, it's the old thing. We say it's five times easier to sell something to an existing client than it is to find a new one. Well, it's five times easier to do another JV with someone who's done a JV than to find a new one. So let's make sure we leave that relationship with a high value footprint in their mind. Now, having confirmed that reciprocation occurred approximately, if it didn't, we make up for it somehow, then there's the opportunity to refer to other people, to other JV partners, or what I call OPN partners. Now, three referrals. Almost everyone knows three people that they know would also like to do some sort of swap or JV. Mm-hmm. And what you'll find over a 90-day period, and our KPI is we do one per week. We do one swap per week, essentially one partner per week. So over a 90-day period, let's assume not everyone does a swap. Let's assume we do get 8 out of 12 doing the debrief. Then that's 24 partners I'm getting referred to.
Mm-hmm.
On average, 8 of those will have a smaller email list than my partner I just did the swap with. On average, 8 will have the same size list as the partner I just did the swap with. And on average, 8 will have a larger email list with the partner I just did a swap with. Mm-hmm. So every 90 days, on average, I'm spiraling up the email list size. These days, we're getting 1,000 new email subscribers every month organically and naturally just by running webinars. And we used to get like 5. So it builds. And what I'm saying is we're all born naked. Mm-hmm. Just start.
Absolutely.
Use the JV system. Do the debrief and the referral. Don't do what 99% of marketers do, which is just chase the next JV. Mm-hmm. Do the debrief. Make sure your partner got value and get those referrals, because that's the fastest way to build a high-quality email list. Most of the money in the JV partnership or the OPN swap is not made during the swap. It's made at the debrief.
Good advice. And I think that so many people can get caught with thinking, oh, you know, that, but I don't want to go because, you know, I'm not as big or as good as that other person, and they never get going. And it's really tragic to see. You talked about having 7 people on your first webinar. I had 3. But I always, and I say this to my clients too, Tony Robbins, when he ran his very first event in his lounge room, his very first one, he had three people. So I'm always like, well, if it's good for Tony Robbins, it's good for me. And look at where he is now. So just get going.
Yeah, absolutely. Just start. That's where the genius, the power, and the magic is. As Goethe said, I started a mastermind group with one person. I didn't want to start with one person.
Yeah.
Ended up with four groups, the biggest group at 145 people.
Wow. And how many people with that one person would stop or wouldn't even actually, probably not even stop, would not even go further, wouldn't even launch?
Yeah. Well, the second meeting, we had two people and it grew from there. And I prefaced those first two meetings, one where I had one person, one with two people, with saying, you know, when KFC launched, you know, that greasy, mucky fat dripping off every bit. I mean, but what do they say? Hey, folks, this is finger licking good. So they turned the disadvantage into a benefit. And I still remember the first time I ate KFC was in New Zealand, and it was like all this greasy, fatty, yucky stuff on my fingers. And I'm going, ew. And then I go, oh, hang on. Oh, it is finger licking good. So there was a piece of marketing genius. So what I did with the one person, the two people, I said, the good news is you're going to get my full and complete attention. Because when we get to 50 or 100 people, you're not going to be out of that. So let's make the most of it now. We have a full day together with just us. So let's really get to squeeze every single drop out of the lemon. That's why this is a good thing for you, that you're the only person in the room.
Yeah, yeah. And when they get a huge amount of value, what do? They say, oh, I know someone else that would love to be here.
Share the love. And if there's 100 people in the room, I'd explain to them why that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because of the diversity, and because I'm not the only source of wisdom here, and so on and so on and so on. So it's, you know, you could call it spin doctoring or pivoting or repositioning, but there is always a benefit in something, in some way of doing something.
I think there's a little bit of gold in there. Actually, I don't think I know, and I just wanted to touch on it before we moved on, is that always share the benefit of wherever you are in the journey or wherever you are in the process. And I think I read a story just recently that of Jägermeister. I mean, that stuff is like petrol, it's horrible stuff. But the whole idea behind that and the marketing behind that, and how the American culture, like when it came over from Europe, how they turned that into something that everyone wanted.
Right.
It's such a great story. So if you haven't heard that, go look it up, because it's genius.
Party shots and so on. Yeah, it's not the most pleasant drink in the world, that's for sure.
No, but most people have got a story of having a shot of Jaeger at like 1 or 2 in the morning, right? And that's what the whole thing's about.
Yes, it's about when you'd need to have had, you know, a bottle of red wine first, and then you're in it. Yeah, I'll try that now. Thank you.
Exactly.
But you're right. It's a matter of making being explicit about the benefit of the feature. Mm-hmm. The feature is there's only two people in my mastermind group. What's the benefit of that? Now, you'll notice that in the room, there's only two of you here. And the reason that's a positive is because benefit, 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 benefit. So we don't assume that people understand the benefit. Mm-hmm. Be explicit about the benefit, whatever the benefit is, whether it's fatty grease on your fingers, finger licking good, or you get my full undivided attention because there's only two of you here. Be explicit about the benefit.
Yeah, totally. Love it. So once we've got this audience, I know that something else that you do really well is create stickiness on your webinars. You create content that is mesmerizing, that people stick around for. What tips can you give us around that?
Well, the big thing is, you know, we talk about engagement on a webinar and we want people to stay around for the end. Well, the first thing I'll say is what does not do that is what's called the stick strategy, which is at the end of this, I will give you X, Y, Z, A, B, C. So stick around for that. Mm-hmm. That is just a poor compensation for poor quality content. If the content is riveting and engaging and captivating, you don't need a stick strategy. People are going to hang around. So that's BS straight off the bat. Don't worry about stick strategy, because focus on making your content. I have a saying, if it's not captivating, it's not marketing. Mm-hmm. And that's the standard. So how do you create content that's captivating? And there's a whole sequence to go through, and we don't have time to go through every single step, but I have this concept called the concept conveyor. And what the concept conveyor shows you how to do is it shows you how to create an idea and convey that in such a way that's engaging and educational, entertaining, and also motivational. Now, before I talked about the 100 sleeping bears, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about, you know, how do you find audiences? About 100 sleeping bears, explain the difference between outbound marketing and inbound marketing. It was a metaphor, 100 sleeping bears, 3 of them hungry. So that's a good example of the concept conveyor. What we've done is we've taken an idea, which is that we really want to give people a taste of our brand before we propose meeting with them. Mm-hmm. We've taken that and we've put it into a concept called the 100 Sleeping Bears. So the first thing you do is you give the idea that you're wanting to convey a name, a title. So I have the so-segmentation formula, I have Hugh Jackman marketing, I have the 100 Sleeping Bears. Uh-huh. Every main point that I want to communicate has a label. And as soon as you give a thing a label, you differentiate it from just everyone else saying the same thing, the idea. Mm-hmm. You know, I have the 100 Sleeping Bears. I mean, probably someone else out there is going to start talking about the 100 Sleeping Bears too, and I'll create something else. But at the moment, so you give it a label, and so it becomes a thing. The next step in the concept conveyor, step two, is you explain what you're about to tell them. So you tell them what you're about to tell them. So when I talked about the 100 Sleeping Bears, I said, this will explain the difference between outbound marketing and inbound marketing. And step three is you create a story, a metaphor, or a simile around the point you're wanting to communicate. In my case, I'm talking about putting the honeypot outside. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so step four is you recap and you say, and that is why we don't do outbound marketing. It's why we do inbound marketing, et cetera. And then you take questions. So that concept conveyor consists of five steps, and it allows you to communicate an idea in such a way that's motivational, inspirational, and engaging. The key is to turn it into a metaphor or a simile or a story. I have another story about Hugh Jackman marketing, and I tell a story about, you know, the time I asked my wife, if Hugh Jackman knocked on the front door and proposed marriage to you, what would you say? And she said, I'd run away with the guy. I mean, it's free for
you. I'm on your wife's side with that one.
Sorry, Tom. I love you. I love you, but Jackman. And I actually said to her, this is a true story. I said to her, I thought about it for a moment. And I said, you know, I don't think you need to apologize. She said, why is that? I said, well, If Hugh Jackman knocked on the front door and I answered and he proposed to me, I'd probably run away too. And I'm not even gay, you know, it's Hugh freaking Jackman.
Exactly.
So then I say, well, and the reason why that's important is that you can't practice Hugh Jackman marketing. Hugh Jackman can get away proposing to my wife at first sight. She says, yes. Oh my God. Yes. I can't do that in a commercial context. Mm-hmm. People, we need to give people a first date, right? We need to give your prospects, not an immediate hit them up. Do you want consulting services today? But we need to give them a first date to warm them up because we're not Hugh Jackman. So the Hugh Jackman is another example of the concept conveyor. Essentially what I'm saying is don't propose to people the moment you meet them at a business networking meeting or a conference. Mm-hmm. Create the opportunity for them to get to know your brand through a webinar or through your book or whatever else, and then propose that. Otherwise it's premature proposition. So that's another example of the concept conveyor. Giving it a name, Hugh Jackman marketing, explain what it's going to explain, telling the story, the metaphor, the analogy, wrapping it up again, and taking questions. That's how we convey content in a way which is going to really keep people engaged.
I love that. And there's a piece in there that years ago, and I've never forgotten this, years and years ago, when I first started running conferences, one of those steps I forgot, and it was the very first one, to give context. And now I talk about it so much. You must give context, because otherwise, I did this whole 2-hour talk on joint ventures, which I thought was great. We got to the lunch break. Everyone's looking at each other like, what the heck just happened? And then people were approaching me at lunchtime. Went, we just did not understand that. And it was at that moment that I went, I did not give context. And I had to come back from the lunch break, give the context. It was all done backwards. Everyone's like, oh, now we get it. So definitely those five steps in order is definitely the prescription.
An educator explained it to me. He said, you got to give people the umbrella view. Mm-hmm. So this is everything we're going to cover here. So I'm going to talk to you about joint ventures and how you can create a fresh flow of leads virtually every single month through webinars. That's kind of the umbrella view. That's context, if you like. And then you drill down to the steps.
Absolutely. Yes. I learned that very quickly. If you don't give context, like, doesn't matter how good your metaphors are, they're not going anywhere.
Well, at least you learned it, because there's some people still doing that, still haven't got it, and they've done 100 talks.
It's something I do every
wrong
time.
With my audiences.
it's maybe not the audience. Awesome. This has been so great, Tom. I have got a feeling that I'm going to be inviting you back pretty soon to dive into this even deeper, because it is so great. But I think that today has given us a really great overview on how to build our audience, which is something that it's actually a question I get so often. I'm running a Q&A call with my clients this morning, and I know it's the first question off the bat. They've already said, how do I build my audience? Right. It is the question I get over and over and over and over. So this episode has been really great. There's a lot of value. I think that everyone should go back and listen and take some notes. How do people stay connected with you to learn more about what it is that you do?
Probably the best thing they can do is go to leadgendemo.live. Mm-hmm. Leadgendemo.live. Sign up for the next lead gen, the next marketing webinar I do, because on those live webinars, you can see exactly how I explain how we get the audiences in more detail. We explain how to do the titles of webinars. We go into we train the sequence of how to do a webinar. Leadgendemo.live. They can go and register. We run them on the first Wednesday of each month, US Eastern Standard Time, because most of our audiences are in North America. But we do run two a day because we have a global audience. We cover Western Europe, UK, Australia, New Zealand, etc. So leadgendemo.live is where they can go. And then they'll be on our email list after that, and we'll give them podcasts and all sorts of cool stuff.
They get to date you. Metaphorically.
Yeah, I promise I won't knock on your door and propose marriage. You can come to the webinar. And the other PS, I guess, is a lot of people try social media, and I suppose you cover off why that's not as effective as running an event. And these days with COVID-19, the events tend to be webinars. Mm-hmm. And the way I explain that is that social media is kind of like speed dating, and a webinar is like taking someone out for a night on the town. You know, we have dinner, we have the show, we have theater, we might have coffee back at my place, whatever. But it's just a much more immersive experience for folks. So by all means, do the social media to keep your brand and people's brand until they're ready to buy. But create an event, because the event is like a night out on the town. People can really get to know you well, and you get the opportunity to establish that trust and rapport and respect and relatability.
Love it. There's been so much value in this episode. Thank you so much for sharing, Tom. Really appreciate you. And I'll pop all those links to connect with Tom and to grab that free resource in the show notes. But thank you again.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to listen to the show. Whenever you're ready, here are three ways I can help you. Number one, grab a free copy of the Thought Leaders Positioning Checklist over at samanthariley.global/checklist. Number two, check out my inner circle for coaches, experts, and change makers over at samanthariley.global/inner-circle. Or number three, connect with me to discuss how I can work with you on a more personal or a one-on-one level at hello@samanthariley.global. I look forward to hanging out with you here again on Thursday, right here on the Thought Leaders Business Lab.